Good morning, Good Life. My name is David Catrone. I'll be preaching today, and we're going to be finishing up our series, Promised. We'll be going through the promise in Psalm 46, which is, be still and know that I'm God. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that you are here, and you're present, and you're with us. I pray that you'd give me your words, that it would be less of me, more of you, that as a church body, we would be urged and pushed and encouraged further and deeper into you, that as we would know you more, we would worship you more, we'd be more still. I pray that you'd make sense of some of these missed promises and these misconceptions that we might have. Just kind of wake us up to who you are. I pray these things in your name. Amen. Okay, so I don't preach every Sunday. If you've never been a Good Life, this is like, I preach like once every 6 months. And I feel like you guys are going to get the better of me. The first like 6 minutes of the first sermon, I'm like, wow, these lights are really bright. And I'm like trying to make sense of everything, but I feel like I got it now. So we'll be in Psalm 46 today. I really wrestled as I was preparing for this, like how to go about it and what was the best way to kind of talk about it. Because this series is all about promises that we might have read in the scriptures, like, for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, or I can do all things through Christ. You know, all these kind of more famous, popular verses and promises, and how culture and different churches and how we have kind of misconstrued those or understood them wrong. And so this is kind of going to be what we're going to go through. And as I've kind of wrestled with what was the best way to do that, I really just thought, okay, the reason why that's happening is because we're not understanding the context, right? We're not understanding what the author was trying to say, right? We're missing the intention, so therefore we're missing what the verse is actually trying to say. So why not go through the passage and make sure that we're understanding the context correctly? And the hope is that that would help us understand the promise better. So that's what we're going to do. I'm literally just going to walk us through Psalm 46. I'm going to read it once, and then the second time I'll go through it kind of passage by passage. And the hope is at the end we'll kind of have a really good picture of what the author was trying to say. So when we look at that promise of be still and know that I'm God, we're like, oh, yeah, we saw that through every step of the way. So let's read Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved to the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Selah. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I'm God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress, Selah. So that's Psalm 46. So basically, I just want to take it passage by passage and kind of work through it. So we're going to be in that first passage, and the first passage is going to be that kind of God is our refuge to the first Selah. And I lead a Bible study on Tuesday nights, and something that's been taught to me, and if you've ever been to Bible study with me, I talk about it all the time. I think it's how we're supposed to read the scriptures, is this idea of observation, interpretation, application, right? I might even slip another one in there of observation, questions that lead to interpretation, application, right? Because again, the context is important. That's why we have this whole series. It's because someone along the lines missed the context. We taught this promise the wrong way, and then it's all kind of trickled into us throughout the church. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to literally walk through this passage. I'm going to make observations. We're going to kind of interpret those observations. And kind of how does that apply to us as believers? What do we do, say, think differently about now? So let's look at passage one. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. Though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling, Selah. Okay, so what are some observations right off the bat? One, God is our refuge, right? We see that right at the beginning. God is our refuge. Two, God is our strength, right? He's not just our refuge. He's not just our strength, right? If you're a note taker, you feel free to write these things down. I'm not a note taker, so I won't be offended if you don't. God is our refuge. God is our strength, right? Different things, right? I'm not sure what that means, but they're different. God is our refuge. God is our strength. And then he says this, God is our very present help in trouble, right? That's three. Then it says, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way. Therefore, when you're reading the scriptures and you're looking at context, never miss a therefore. Therefores are super, super, super important. The author is saying, hey, listen, what I just said was literally the foundation. I just built a building on this foundation. I'm about to say, everything I'm about to say now is true because of what I just said before, right? So we got to make sure we know what he said before. Otherwise, we're going to miss the promise. We're going to miss the whole reason of what he's saying. So he says, therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way. Why are we not fearing? What is the foundation of that not fearing as believers? God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our ever-present help in trouble, right? Because of those three things, we have a firm foundation. That firm foundation is what? We will not fear. We don't have to fear. We shouldn't fear. We're commanded not to fear. Why? God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our ever-present help in trouble. Another observation is this. The psalmist says, therefore, we will not fear though what? Though the earth gives way. He doesn't say, therefore, we will not fear when things get difficult, right? When things are a little tough, we will not fear. He says, we will not fear when what? The literal ground that you stand on gives way. We will not fear, right? Think about that, the earth giving way. Is there anything more foundational to like human existence than the earth being there when we take a step, right? Like, I don't have any doubt that when I take that step, there's going to be something underneath me to catch me. He's saying, if that stops being true, if that sure foundation of literally the ground being there stops being something you can count on, even then, therefore, we will not fear. Even if the earth gives way, we will not be afraid. He's literally saying, I'm trying to conjure, this psalmist is saying this, the worst case scenario is the literal earth that we're living on goes, nah, no more. It's going to stop doing my job, right? Even then, we will not fear. Therefore, we will not fear. Why? We not fear. God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our ever-present help in trouble. This whole passage I'm going to talk a lot about today, this whole passage makes me think of Hurricane Irma, right? So my wife and I probably had the worst 2 weeks of our marriage. It felt like 2 years, but it was 2 weeks of our marriage during Irma, okay? If you're anything like us, it was this constant battle of, I said we should go. She said we should stay, right? I'm prone to being like, that's my nature. Like, oh, let's get out of here. Like, let the house burn down. Who cares? Let's just go. Like, it's like 7 days before the hurricane's supposed to hit. I'm like, just pack it up. Like, let's just get out of here. She's the opposite. Like, she's the kind of person that's like, the storm could be a category 19. She's like, ah, we'll be fine. Like, that's just her personality. So we're kind of like wrestling back and forth. This, we have a 5-week-old. I just sold my business. My Aunt Renee had just passed away from a brain aneurysm like a week or two before this. So life is just crazy. And like every day I feel like I'm getting a phone call, and I'm sure some of you got this, like people that don't live in Florida who are calling you, like, wait, you're still there? Like, do you realize what's happening? I'm like, I don't think it's gonna be as bad as I think it is. They're like in, you know, impending doom, like natural disaster, apocalypse, like you need to get out now. And at first I'm like, no, I think I'm fine. And then like after like the third or fourth phone call, I'm like, yeah, maybe we should get out of here, right? Maybe I'm missing something. And my wife had this idea, like, no, I'm gonna show you this video, like this will make you feel better. There's a video of like what a category 1 will do to your house, what a category 2, 3. And I think she meant for it to be like positive. Like I would leave this video like, oh, we'll be fine. And like I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, category 1, 2, oh yeah, it's nothing, we'll be fine. 3, I'm like, ooh. 4, I'm like, wow, the roof flies off on 4? I'm like, isn't this supposed to be a category 5? She's like, no, on second thought, I think this video is wrong. I don't think that's what's going to happen. They're just kind of trying to scare you. I'm like, why'd you show it to me? Now I'm scared, right? So this is happening for weeks. Anyway, this whole passage makes me think of that time, right? It felt like the earth was literally giving way. Everyone thought the earth was going to give way during Irma. Like, it was the worst storm in 5,000 years kind of thing. And just panic, just pandemonium. Everyone's panicking. The psalmist tells to us, in that time, no matter what it is, therefore we will not fear, right? Though the earth gives way, we will not fear, right? We have a firm foundation. Why? God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our ever-present, always present, ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. There's another kind of observation in there that I think is a little deeper, but I think it's important. And I'm just going to kind of read my notes here. Horrible, life-shattering, life-altering, terrifying calamities like the earth giving way happen to believers like us. We are not immune from suffering. God's goal is not to make sure bad things don't happen. God doesn't promise that. God's promise is that he will be our ever-present help in trouble, not so that we don't get trouble, right? I think that's just, I haven't even gotten there yet, but I think that's part of the miss here, right? Unfortunately, if I'm bold enough to say it, there are pastors that will preach to us that God doesn't want storms to come, right? If you follow God, storms won't come. It's just not true. It's not in the Bible. It says God is our ever-present help in trouble, right? God wrote this. He could have said, I'm your ever-present help, and therefore there won't be trouble. No, he doesn't say that. That's what we read it. That's the context we're putting into it. It's just not there. It says he's our ever-present help in trouble. So what's an observation? We will have trouble, right? John's gospel, Jesus says, you know, in this world there'll be trouble, but don't worry, I've overcome the world, right? So he's telling us there will be trouble, there will be trials, there will be suffering. And I'm not talking like, yeah, bad things might happen, but really bad things won't ever happen to us. No, really terrifying, horrible things will happen to us, even as believers. We're not immune to it. And everyone in here knows that. We all have that thing that we're thinking about, right? God is our ever-present help in trouble. God's goal is his glory and our joy, not us being comfortable. Jesus saved us through the suffering of the cross. He sanctifies us through the sufferings of this world. Right? Why would our lives be any different than his? Let's keep going. The next passage, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress, Selah. A couple observations or things that jump out to me. This idea of this imagery of the city of God, right? It says that there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, the city of God, and she, her, the city of God, shall not be moved, right? So there's this imagery there that I think a couple things that it kind of brings out to me. The idea of the body of Christ, like we as believers, right? We take refuge in Christ. We've given up on everything else. We take refuge in him. He is our city, our home, the place we take refuge from the nations out there that rage, right? The nations in here that rage, we take refuge in him. And this stream that makes glad the city of God, I think, it's the Holy Spirit, this thing that connects us, that connects every part of the body, right? That makes us glad. It gives us hope and peace in the midst of the nations that rage. God is in the midst of her. God is in the midst of us, his people, right? Inside of us and inside of the church. I think there's also this reference to this future city, right? It says in Revelation that when Christ comes back, he'll make all things new and that we will live in this holy city with him, physically with him, right? And I think that there's like a subtle reference here, right? Like one day we will have this. We have it now, but not totally. And one day we will have it fully, but we have it now. And there's this theological phrase that I think is really important that we'll kind of touch on throughout this passage. People refer to it as like a Paul's theology, this idea of already, but not yet, right? Already, but not yet. Already we are in the city of God, but not yet. We haven't fully grasped it. We haven't fully experienced it. We can't fully experience it right now. But it's ours. But it's a done deal, right? I think about Ephesians. It says, we are already seated with Christ in the heavenly places. Well, I don't feel seated with Christ in heavenly places, right? It feels like I'm on earth. But he's saying, no, but that's already done. That's already been accomplished, right? So there's a already, but not yet. There's this tension, this already, but not yet, right? I see that here. This future city of God, we are already there as believers. We've already kind of put our hope in this city. Already, but not yet, do we experience it. Then it says this, God is in the midst of her, she shall, the city of God, shall not be moved. This is a promise for us as believers, right? Yes, he's our ever-present help in trouble, but we, his people, will not be moved, right? The foundations of this city are secure, right? Though the earth gives way, the foundations of this city are secure. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. That's a promise, something we hold on to, right? When my wife and I ended up deciding to stay during Irma, and then we ended up going to Jesse P. Miller. which I don't know if you went to a shelter, was just absolute chaos, right? Like, just humanity just devolves into like the worst things ever at these shelters. But it was like, all right, we got to do it. We're here. And even when you get there, you can't leave. Like, people were freaking out because once you get there, it's like, it's cops are there. You're like, can't leave. I'm like, well, hold on a second. I'm a free citizen. I can leave. Like, no, you can't. That's not how this works. And if you do, you could get arrested. I'm like, wow, okay. But I keep thinking about in this passage the idea of like, we had put all our eggs in this basket, right? Like, I'm taking everyone's word that this school is going to hold up in the worst of storms, right? Everyone tells you, oh, it's built a certain way, it's going to handle it. Like, we put all our eggs in that basket. Because that was my fear with staying home was, God forbid something happens and the storm comes and it's as bad as everyone says it is. I got a 5-week-old and I just look at my wife and I'm like, we messed up. Like, the roof comes blowing off and I'm like, what can I do at that point? Like, we put our hope in this house and there's no other option at this point, right? We lost. I didn't feel like that was going to happen in school. Like, I put all my eggs in that basket. I trusted it, right? Same concept, right? We can hold on to that promise that we will not be moved. This is a promise that God is making in his word, that we can put all our eggs in that basket, in the city of God, in this hope in Christ, right? Storms will come, and we might lose a lot of things on the way, but we will not lose him, right? Because isn't that the goal of coming to Christ, right? Like, I couldn't be in my house and at Jesse P. Miller. I couldn't put my hope in my house and in Jesse P. Miller. I had to say no. Like, we're leaving everything behind, and we're going and putting our hope in Jesus, in our hope in Jesse P. Miller. It's the same concept. This is the gospel. This is what we as believers have done. We have said no to everything else and said yes to Jesus. You are enough for me, that when tribulation and trials and suffering comes, I know that you're good. I know that you're able to carry us through. Hold on to that promise. He who started a good work in us will finish it. He who started a good work in us will finish it. Remember that. Fight for that every day. Who started a good work will finish it. Because there's not just storms, like circumstance storms, right? Those are going to happen. There's cancer and death and trial and tribulation. Like, those things will happen outside of us. The nations will rage outside of us. They'll also rage inside of us as we pursue Jesus. We think, do I want to keep going? Is it worth it? Like, that is a fight that we will deal with every day. And he says, you shall not be moved. Like, I started a good work in you. I'll finish it. You shall not be moved. Hold on. Trust the city of God as a city that cannot fall. No matter what wars and bombs you see outside the city walls, this city will not fall. Trust me, the city will not fall. I think also of like a captain on a ship. And we're like, Jesus, the storm. Like, just like the disciples. I'll talk about it in a second. Jesus, the storm. He's like, you know, I could see like wet, it's like dark out. He's soaking wet. And he's like, look at me. We're going to make it. It's not going to be easy. But this ship is getting to port. Trust me, it's getting there. Nothing's going to stop me. It's kind of like, okay, that's the promise here. We will not be moved in the city of God. We will not be moved. He is our fortress. This is a promise to us. Okay, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Right after that, we see God will help her when morning dawns. I think about the morning, again, after Irma. That like weird, eerie feeling of like leaving the school. It was like dark and gray out, and you're kind of like, oh my, what's gonna happen? What are we gonna find? You know what I mean? Like, we were only gone for 2 days, and it was like, oh my gosh, the morning had dawned. The suffering and the trial of Irma had happened, and it was like, hey, now we have to go see what we're left with, right? And for some, it was nothing. For us, we just lost power. Like, that was it. We were really blessed. We just lost power. It was whatever. But it's still that morning after, right? And I think about kind of what that means in this passage, this idea that God is with us. He's our ever-present help in trouble, right? And that could feel like he's very distant. Like, listen, trouble's going to come. Suck it up, right? Just trust me in it. But he's there with us after the suffering. He's there with us. He's saying, trust me, trust me, trust me. I can turn all things into good. I can use all things, even this trial, even this suffering, even this storm, I can use for your good and for my glory. And then when the suffering happens, he doesn't say, all right, now man up and keep going. He's with us in the suffering. He's with us in the morning after and in the middle of the suffering. He's a God near to the brokenhearted, right? This summer, not this summer, a year ago actually now, which is crazy, my Aunt Renee passed away from a brain aneurysm. We got a phone call on a Sunday afternoon. My mom was bawling. I couldn't even have a conversation with her. I just screamed at her. I said, put dad on the phone now. I didn't know what had happened. And they were literally jumping in the car. It was about 6 seconds before that they had gotten a phone call. They jumped in the car. They drove to the airport and just begged somebody to let them on a flight. My Aunt Renee had had a brain aneurysm out of nowhere. She had raised my mom. So she was like technically a grandmother to me. And she was in a coma, and they didn't think she was going to make it. So my parents flew there. And after a few weeks, she ended up passing away. It was devastating, right, to watch. Devastating. It was that idea of trouble, right? And God promising us, I'm your ever-present help in trouble. But he's also there the morning after, right? Because what? You go back to normal life. Somehow, some way, we kind of like move on, right? We don't just sit there. We kind of keep going. But there's that pain and those scars and that all that kind of comes with it. And he's also a God that's with us in the trouble. He's also a God that's with us in the morning after. Like, think about my mom. He's with my mom who lost her sister, right? He's with me. He's with us the morning after. Right after that, we see this. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice and the earth melts. The reality is this. The nations will rage. We see this. We see it in our own lives, the kind of the nations within us, right? We see the sin and the death and destruction, what it's like to live life outside of the garden. We see it on the news. God knows we see it on the news. We see craziness and outrage and just disgusting, disgusting, horrible, sinful things that we see every day, right? The nations will rage. We see this part where he says, he utters his voice and the earth melts, right? God could speak and it would all be done in a second. Nothing holds him back. He could speak and it would all be over. None of this suffering would happen anymore. It would all be over. It makes me think of Mark 4, 37 through 40, where it says this. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, Teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, Quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? See, when the nations rage around us, when they rage around the city of God, when they rage within our own lives, when they rage in circumstances, when they rage in tribulation, when the earth, the thing that we put our foundation in, begins to literally fall out from underneath us, we ask questions like that. Like, God, don't you care? Jesus, where are you? Aren't you able to save me from this? Aren't you powerful enough? Do we think God couldn't have stopped Irma? Do we think for a second that Irma was just like kind of got away from God? Right? Like him and the devil were getting into it and he's like, he got me this time. Irma, I wasn't ready for it. Right? Do we think that? Do we think that like horrible, tragic things like hurricanes and death and cancer and suffering, that they come and God goes, man, I just missed it. If I would have seen it, I would have stopped it. Right? We can't think that. So what does Jesus say? I think he says something like this. Guys, listen, I see it. My heart breaks. I see the suffering. I see the storm. I see the tribulation. But I need you to trust me. I am so big. My ways are higher than your ways. I'm able to work even this thing out, this tragic, horrible thing. I'm able to work it out for your joy and for your glory. Everything. Think about the cross. I didn't even talk about this in the last thing, but it just keeps coming to mind. Think about the cross. The cross is the worst crime the world has ever seen. Think about that for a second. The holiest person, the most righteous person that's ever walked the face of the earth, the most undeserving person, took on the worst death, the most deserving punishment, the worst thing that humanity could come up with. He took it on as though he was guilty, right? That makes that disgusting. And God says, no, I'm using this. I will make life out of this dead ground and dirty. I will make life out of this, right? It's the same for us. It's the same for us. Same for us. God could stop it all. All the suffering, all of it, all of the nations raging, he could speak and they would all melt in fear and terror. He chooses not to. He says to us, do you trust me? On this side of eternity, he wants to be our ever-present help in trouble, not our helper out of trouble. God, in his sovereign wisdom, has decided it is better this way. He could have done it a different way, but he's decided it's better this way. We can know him better when we experience him in all situations, trial, tribulation, good, happiness, a lot, a little. We can know him in all of it. It is for our good that we endure storms. Do you trust him? Let's keep going. Last passage. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariot with fire. Be still and know that I'm God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress, Selah. What's the first thing the psalmist opens up with in this passage is, hey, come here, let me show you what our God is capable of. Let me show you the desolation that he can bring on the earth, right? This is similar to that already but not yet thing, right? That when God decides to speak and act against the nations that rage, whether they're inside of us or outside of us, he'll decimate them. When God decides to act against evil the way we want him to act now against evil, it will be desolation. He will make war cease. No one will stop him. Cancer will be destroyed. I mean, just recently in the news, men who abuse spiritual power and abuse children, they will be destroyed. That wickedness will be destroyed. And the psalmist says, come look at what your God is capable of. Hurricanes will be no more. Dictators, famine, hatred, bigotry, racism, they'll all be destroyed. Just like in the boat with the disciples, he will calm the storms that we deal with, right? He will calm all of them. And part of him calming them will be him destroying wickedness. He will decimate it. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Here's the reality. That isn't today. That isn't how he acts today with us, right? That's not how, he doesn't make sure every bad thing goes away now. He does. There's sometimes he saves us and plucks us right out of the fire. There's times he doesn't. He is our ever-present help in trouble. God is our refuge and our strength. He is our ever-present help in trouble, right? Why would we need God to be our refuge and our strength if nothing bad ever happened? Right? There's so many pastors who are going to tell you something different than this. Turn them off. They got nothing for you. This is not true that nothing bad will happen. We are not immune to bad things. We are not set up in this Christian life to get prosperity, wealth, and health. That's not the gospel. That's not the life that Jesus lived. Why would we expect something different for us? God is our ever-present help in trouble. God is our refuge because there is trouble. God is our strength in trouble. That isn't today, but one day it will be. One day, it will be today that he makes the nations not rage anymore, that he makes the earth melt. But until then, we say this, or he says this, be still and know that I'm God, I will be exalted. So until that day, that's the promise. Okay, so let's recap Psalm 46. What do we see? God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our ever-present help in trouble. Trouble, suffering, our earth giving way, the nations raging. Don't be surprised, believer, when they come. Don't be surprised when terrible things come, right? Don't cry out to God and say, you shouldn't do this. You promised me something different. He didn't. He's saying, do you trust me? Trouble will come. But here's another promise. God's people cannot fall. He's in the midst of her. She will not fall. Hold on to that promise. God is capable. Here's another thing we see. God is capable. This is not an inability. This is not something that God's not capable of doing. He is capable, right? But he's saying, trust me. I'm using even this storm, even this trial, I'm using it for my glory. One day, it's the last thing that we see. One day, he will make all things new. He will calm the storms as we wish he did now. One day, he will make it all melt. Be still and know that I'm God. My hope is that you would see clearly, as we work through this passage, these misconceptions that I think people might have. I'm going to list them off, but my hope is that it's kind of already been touched on. We kind of see it already as we work through this passage, what the author is saying. So here's one of the first misconceptions I think we have, or where we miss this promise, right? First, be still and know that I'm God. Everything's going to just be okay. Everything will be fine. And I think in part that is true. One day, everything will be fine. right? But be still and know that I'm God doesn't mean that everything in life will be easy. It doesn't mean that God won't let bad things happen. It doesn't mean that you'll be prosperous, healthy, and wealthy because of Jesus. No matter how many people want to tell you that, that's just not in the Bible, right? Already, but not yet. Be still and know that I'm God. God's goal isn't our comfort. God's goal is our joy. God's goal is to carry us to completion in Him. You and I, as believers, we will make it to the end of this. He will carry us to completion. He who started a good work in us will finish it. No matter the storms, no matter the trials, this boat will make it to port. We might not have anything with us when we get there, but who cares? If we get Jesus, we have it all. A quote I think about all the time as I'm preparing for this is Martin Luther, the Protestant reformer, said this. He said, "I don't want to go to heaven." He said, "I want to be with Jesus. And if he's in hell, send me there. I could care less. I just want Jesus." Same reality, right? Another thing I think about as I'm preparing for this is one of my favorite songs. The singer says this. He says, and he's like almost in tears as he's singing. He says, "Tie me to the front of this old ship and point it home." And just before, he talks about how he wants to jump ship. So many things call his attention to go to another place. And he says, "I don't want to fall. I don't want to think that these things are better than Jesus. Just tie me to the ship and point it home. I don't care if it drags me all the way. I just, when I'm thinking about it with a solemn brain, with a clear heart, I want that. But then when trials come and difficult things come, I question whether or not I want it." He says, "Just tie me to the ship and point me home. Jesus is better." That's what I want for us as believers. That we would see him and go, he's better. Doesn't matter what tribulation comes, doesn't matter what suffering comes, he's better. Right? That we trust him in the storm. We trust him in the storms of life. That we'd be still and know that he's God. When the nations rage outside of us, and most importantly, when the nations rage inside of you, when your faith is questioned, when you're full of sin and you go, "What am I doing?" Be still and know that I'm God. I will carry us. I will make sure you make it there. As people of God, we can hang our hat on that. We will make it. We will stand before him. I was just texting a friend of mine this morning. And I texted him and said, "Yo, one day, it won't be about faith anymore. It'll just be sight. One day, it won't be faith. We won't talk about faith anymore. We won't talk about hope anymore. We'll just be in his presence." And he's like, "Guys, trust me, I'll get us there. But I love you too much to tell you that bad things aren't going to happen. I will use all of those things, suffering, trials, tribulation, whatever it takes to sanctify my people. I care about you too much, whatever it takes." Another thing I see, which I think is a smaller one, but it's possible that people will kind of pull this misconception out, is be still and know that I'm God. Just kind of don't do anything. Just chill. Like, I got it. It's like, you don't really have to do anything. Like, just kind of live your life however you want. I'm good. I got it. That's just not the reality. This rest that we talk about is an active rest. It's a striving for rest, right? In Hebrews, he says, "Strive to enter the rest." I think it's the craziest phrase ever. He says, "Strive to enter the rest. Wrestle with your heart. Heart, hope in God. He is enough. Don't look at the storms. Don't look at what the enemy's telling you maybe he's not strong enough because he's letting this thing happen. Or maybe he doesn't love me." No. He's saying, hope in God. Trust him. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. So how are we as God's people to enjoy this promise correctly? How are we to use this promise every day to know God better? Just go back to the context, right? This the whole point of the series is that people don't go back to the context. We as believers need to go back to what is the author trying to say? God is our refuge. God is our strength. He is our strength. Like literally, he is our strength. He doesn't make us stronger. We have no strength except in him, right? When the hurricane came, I didn't have any kind of strength in myself. I had to say, I'm just trusting that Jesse P. Miller is enough for me, right? That's the gospel. I'm trusting that this building, this refuge, this city of God is enough for us. That's what we're hoping everything in. And I can't put one foot in my house and one foot in Jesse P. Miller. Then I'm in the storm without any hope, right? You put all your eggs in one basket. Right? We've run to Jesus and said, "Jesus, you have to be enough. I don't have anything else. You have to be enough." That's what it means to trust in Jesus. church, believers, family, be still. Right? Be still and know that he's God. And then it says right after that, I will be exalted. He's saying, listen, I exist for my namesake. Here's the hope. Here's how you can be sure that this ship's going to make it there. No matter the tribulations, no matter the storms, here's how you can be sure that this ship is going to get there. Because my name would not be glorified if it didn't. If we don't make it there and you fall off the ship, if we don't make it there and I let sin eat you alive, then my name's dishonored. God won't let that happen. He said, here's how you can be sure that you can be still. Here's why you can be quiet and trust me. Because I'm God and I will be exalted. We've put all our eggs in that basket. All of our eggs in that basket. But storms will come. We're not immune to them. And when they come, I push you back on that promise. Be still and know that he's God. Really know him. What is God like? He is our refuge. He is our strength. He is our ever-present help in trouble. I'll end with this. I said earlier that therefore is really important in passages, right? Well, here's the therefore that I think is in there kind of secretly, right? As we go through Psalm 46. We don't see it in the passage, but it's a silent therefore, an invisible one. Therefore, now that you know all of these things, be still. Right? Now that you know all of these things, that you know your God could wipe out nations with a word, right? Even though he hasn't, even though one day he will, he doesn't now. Because you know what your God is like, be still. We're making it there. We're going to make it there. There's nothing that can stop us. Our city will not be moved. Believer, hope in that God. Let's pray.